This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
The wall of sound is a function of this studio. There's no doubt about it.
All right. To me, I mean, look, I understand the Boston Celtics are not necessarily our focus here, but I think a confusing, potentially disturbing story in Boston is the one-year suspension. I guess it's not official, but that's what it's probably going to be. A one-year suspension for last year's rising star head coach, Ime Udoka. Took over after Brad Stevens was bumped upstairs to the role of team president. And he did a great job. Celtics had an incredible second half. They ended up in the NBA Finals. There was a time where they looked like they were going to beat Golden State. And you could argue they might have been a better team than Golden State, to be fair. But that's not the way it played out. Anyway, according to the story, it was a consensual, intimate relationship with a fellow member of the team's staff. Okay? That's fair, but suspended for a year? Yeah. Jay Williams from ESPN disagrees with that length of a suspension.
I get breaking team rules, and I'm not condoning the actions at all, but I don't think it would be a year if it was a consensual relationship. Now, the moral side of it, it's something that we can discuss later, because there's people always want to go to that, right? And that story becomes bigger. But I've seen people in business who can still function and run an elite business, even though they've had some breakdowns morally with some things. That now, the breaking team guidelines, I understand that. But a year? That seems extreme to me.
I felt the same way. Stephen A. Smith from ESPN. I don't think we're going to use all of this, but I want to hear the beginning of it anyway.
What I will say is this, and this is a message to the Boston Celtics. I got a problem with you as an organization right now. Because if you're not going to fire him, why the hell do we even know about this story? Nobody's bringing that up. I'm going to bring it up. What the hell are you telling us for? I've been covering the NBA for over a quarter century. And I'm trying to tell you right now, I can't count the amount of fraternization, or dare I say more, that goes on in practically every damn organization within the National Basketball Association, the NFL, Major League Baseball, the list goes on and on. People get together, they working together. That stuff happens all the time.
All right, let me just jump in here. What Stephen A. is getting at is, like, you're going to suspend a guy for a year, but you're not going to fire him. So what you've done by doing this is you have left it up to everybody's imagination. Not that they have to speculate, but where do you live, Boston? There has to be more to this story, and it has to be bad enough that the team, this is not the league, that the team decided to take their rising star head coach out of the equation for a year. So I'm sure there was a consensual, intimate relationship. But this is not about violation of the organization's guidelines. This ain't about that. This is not about, well, you know, we have a strict policy against dating within the workplace. No, you don't suspend the head coach for that for a year. So, what is it? What's the problem? What happened, whether post-relationship, or are there other things other than that relationship that are in play here? Because that's where the truth is. Because, again, and don't even try to compare it to your job or my job unless your job happens to be the head coach of an NBA team or an NHL team or a Major League Baseball team. That's when we have equivalents here.
Yes.
Please, I can't tell you how many people on Twitter, because I just tweeted out the story with, I'm confused.
Yeah.
I'm confused by this. And, well, what's so confusing? If I did that at my job, I'd be fired. I'm like, you don't have that job.
Not the same.
Our job. Like, I'm not trying to say that what we don't do is not important. It isn't. It's inconsequential.
There's a lot more money involved in their jobs than ours.
Right. There's a lot fewer people that can do Ime Udoka's job than can do my job. Yeah. A lot fewer people that can do that job. I shouldn't be saying this out loud. There's people in corner offices monitoring this. I didn't mean that.
No, it's opposite day.
There's one person in this world, and he's busy, who could do my job. Nobody believes that. So, don't be playing the, well, if I did that at my job. No, that ain't it. Something else is at play here, and that's not good. All right, Adrian Wojnarowski. The other story happened late yesterday. I think it happened before we ended the show, but I don't know how big a deal it is. But now, Robert Sarver, the owner of the Phoenix Suns and the Phoenix Mercury, has decided to sell his team. Here's Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN.
Robert Sarver knows now that he would be a pariah if he tried to remain in the NBA, remained in ownership. That certainly played a factor in this. But I think a bigger factor is financial. And I think for Robert Sarver, who at his core is a banker and is somebody who looks at the realities financially of owning the Suns, and that every day he remains as the majority owner of that team, it devalues that franchise. You saw sponsors already starting to pledge that they were going to walk away from agreements once they expired, as long as Sarver was in place. More sponsorships, I think, were on the ledge. And I think for Sarver, he's going to cash out. He's going to make a lot of money in the sale of this team.
He is going to make a ton of money, man. White guy problems right there. Decades of just being a jackass will make him $1.5 billion.
Sheesh.
Awesome. Absolutely awesome. Oh, to have Robert Sarver's problems. Yeah, but that's what's going to happen. And honestly, we could say that we could credit Chris Paul, or we could credit LeBron James or Draymond Green. The real credit goes to PayPal.
Yeah, yes.
Or other, because there were other sponsors also that were coming out to say that if Sarver remains the owner, then we are not going to continue our financial relationship. And I don't know what PayPal pays to put their logo, their patch on the Suns uniform. And by the way, do they use PayPal? I'm just curious.
That's a good question.
Does PayPal use PayPal to pay?
If their HR goes through PayPal? Suns? That's a great question.
It just popped into my head. Also, how many times can I say pay in that sentence?
Payday.
But that's when the decisions get like this get made. When the money gets real. So I also think that Adam Silver, who was criticized for not doing more behind the scenes, was doing more. Because Adam Silver made it clear to anybody who was willing to listen between the lines last week, Adam Silver made it clear that he wasn't happy that his hands were tied, because it's hard to fire your boss.
Not many can do that.
Right. He has 30 bosses. It's hard to fire one of them.
Yeah.
But I do think that there was some back channel pressure applied. My friend Jason Sobel from the Action Network, at Jason Sobel TAN, also Sirius XM 92. He and Michael Collins do Hitting the Green every afternoon, which I listen to on my ride home. Don't tell anybody here. He is actively interested in the President's Cup. It's not over yet, right?
I don't think so. I'm standing right off the second fairway right now, and they're still playing golf. So I think it's still going on.
Good. That is good. All right. So why does it feel like every hole is like the end of the world for the internationals?
Look, Adam, the international team is a little bit undermanned this week.
Yeah.
Combination of the live defectors and just not quite having the depth they need to hang with this American team, which is very, very strong. Average world ranking better than 12th. I think it's 11.6 this week. So this is a very, very good U.S. team. I mean,
yeah.
Even if you had all the guys who went to live, who I don't believe should be allowed to play in this week. I know a lot of people feel differently, but
right.
They knew the rules. They left, and they're gone. And so they're not part of this. So playing a little bit shorthanded. That said, I thought Trevor Immelman sort of put all his balls in the same basket with that first pairing of Adam Scott and Hideki Matsuyama. It feels to me like an NFL team that's 0-2 and has a must-win, quote-unquote, game in Week 3, which, of course, we all know it's not really a must-win, but it's sort of a must-win. You don't want to go 0-3, and so I feel the same way. I know it's the first match of the entire thing, but you don't want to put your two most experienced players out there and have them take an L in the first match, and all of a sudden there's a trickle-down effect. So it does feel like the pressure is going to be on the international team right from the very start.
Yeah, and like I understand putting Scott and Matsuyama out, but I know Adam Scott's putting stats are much better this year, but ultimately mm-hmm. You put two guys out there that miss a lot of makeable putts. And you got to have somebody who you can trust rolling the ball, especially these greens. I mean, I could just tell the way the guys are putting. They are so fast that it's just going to make it even more problematic. Look, Jason Sobel of Action Network and SiriusXM is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. Golf is funny in that over 18 holes, especially match play, the difference between a Scottie Scheffler and a Siwoo Kim, just to use those two players, isn't that much. So Siwoo Kim can go out any particular day and shoot 62, and Scottie Scheffler can shoot 70, and it could be a blowout the other way. But there's these types of events do more to expose players than they do anything else, expose weaknesses and nerves and all of that. I mean, who has to be the star for the internationals for this to be interesting Sunday morning? Adam Gold in studio with my friend Coach Pete DeRuta with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. Coach, how does longevity risk figure into our retirement and income plan?
This is the best of times and the worst of times, Adam. The longevity risk means we're going to live too long. But to me, every day I live is not too long.
Right, absolutely.
Good. So we want our money to outlive us. And unfortunately, many people have seen, you out there listening, maybe one of them, your money is not designed to outlive you. You might outlive your money, and that's not what we want to have happen. Because when we get to that day after you run out of money, it's not going to be a fun time. So let's design a plan that guarantees you'll never run out of money. We call it the GPI plan, Growth Protection Lifetime Income. For the next 10 people, this is a golden ticket, Adam. $1,000 value, we're going to do it at no cost or obligation.
And all you have to do is call. We make it so easy. Would you like financial independence into your retirement and beyond it? 800-661-7383. That golden ticket is a $1,000 value, or you could text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuta.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the answer to that is they probably need about 7 or 8 of them. I just don't think that you can come into this with one guy putting the entire international team on his back and beating the Americans all by himself. It's just not going to work out that way. As I'm hearing cheers, by the way, all over the golf course. You can probably hear them coming through the phone right now. That can't mean good news for the international side. That's got to be cheering for the home side right now.
It's a lot of Canadians in Charlotte, Jason.
There are. There are some very sort of melancholy INT chants at the first tee a few minutes ago. It was about 6 people yelling INT, INT. They might be family members of some of the guys playing. And so I just don't know if there's one player. I came into the week, and my pick still is Adam Scott to win the most points for the international side. I've been very impressed, not just Adam Scott's game. And, you mentioned his putting. He's putted much better this year. He's putted much better over the last couple of years. The motivation is still there. He's in his 40s. Look, the guy's got everything he could ever want. He could, if he retired tomorrow and went and lived – he's got 8 different houses, 8 different countries, and went and just spent time with his family and went surfing and did whatever else he likes to do. You probably couldn't blame him. And yet, he's out there grinding a lot on the PGA Tour. He's had some really solid finishes this year. So I picked Adam Scott to be the top points winner for the international side. But if there's one guy that might rally this whole team around, it's the young kid, Tom Kim. Yeah. You guys saw him win the Wyndham Championship not too far just a couple of months ago. And this kid's got not only all the moxie needed to go play on the course, but I think he's everyone's favorite teammate right now on the international team. A lot of guys have said, man, I'm really enjoying getting to know this kid. He's got Joe Skovrin, a fantastic caddy who we all know just caddied for Ricky Fowler for the last 13 years. Got him on the bag now, and that should be a good partnership. I expect good things from Tom Kim this week as well.
I do, too. I actually think he has to be their star. He's 20 years old. There's no tired in Tom Kim. He plays all five matches for me, unless I guess he gets hit by a beverage cart at Quail Hollow. Jason Sobel is joining us from the Action Network and Sirius XM. You and I often talk about wagering on golf. There are very few value wagers this week. Here's where I think there is value, especially if it's going to be a blowout. Figuring out when matches will end. So, Scottie Scheffler and Sam Burns, I like the value, although it is tied through two. I like the value of that match ending before the 16th hole. You get, like, plus 250 on it.
Yeah, that's not bad. I didn't see those numbers. I like that. I think there's a few ways to play. And granted, this has started already, so this is a little revisionist history.
Right.
I've been saying for the last few weeks, I can't in good conscience tell anyone to play the favorite at minus 700. I mean, that's just, for those who aren't into gambling that much, that means you're betting $700 to win $100. That doesn't feel like a great bet. And yet, in the same vein, I also don't feel great telling anyone to bet on the international side at plus 700 because I don't think they're going to win.
Yeah.
And so you're looking at it. So how do we bet this thing? And I've got a couple of ways. The spread, sort of like betting, you know, a team to win before a certain hole, but look, it's football season. We all know what a spread bet means.
Yes.
If you find the U.S., you might be able to find, if you shop around in different books, you might be able to find the U.S. minus five, but the international team plus six, and try to find a little what they call arbitrage in there, which would not be a bad play whatsoever. And then I look at, again, in terms of football season, using the U.S. team as a parlay. Now, granted, this is not for the faint of heart, but most football bets, let's say you take, I don't know, what is it, Browns minus four tonight.
Yeah.
You're going to get that at minus 110. And so essentially, you're getting $91 for every 100 that you put in.
Right.
Is what you'll win. They take away the thing. If you parlay the Browns tonight or the Steelers, either way, at minus 110, with the U.S. team at minus 700, it moves it up to plus 118. And all of a sudden, you're getting $118 on your $100 bet. So I think essentially using it as a parlay booster, again, not for the faint of heart, because you can win all your football bets. And if the international team somehow wins, you're going to lose all of those parlays. But if you're that confident in the U.S. team, that's not a bad way to play it.
No, and especially since, I mean, if you really wanted to, if you had all these parlay bets, if it looked good and all of a sudden the international team winning on Sunday, going to Sunday, you can always just throw a little on the internationals at that point.
Absolutely. These are great events to hedge with, too.
Yeah.
You know, if at some point today the internationals go up 4-1, you're going to be able to get a much better number on the U.S. team moving forward. By the same token, if the U.S. goes up 5-0 and you're like, you know what, I still think, you know, I've looked at the internationals have held steady since 2005. The four-ball format will play tomorrow, and the singles format, which will be played on Sunday, those are essentially even. And so if you look at it and say, look, I was giving the U.S. team the foursomes session anyway. If the international team drifts to plus 1,000, 10-1 instead of the opening 7-1, and you say, you know what? I can see him coming back. I'm going to jump on that number. It's not a bad event to hedge those bets with a little bit.
All right. Final thing for Jason Sobel of Golf Channel. You're not on today because the coverage is on your channel. You got the day off, don't you?
I don't have the day off. I'm watching people play golf. It's hard work.
That is very hard work. That is amazing. All right, so here's what I've never understood. The United States is 11-1-1 in this competition. This is the 14th iteration of the President's Cup. I just pulled up the 96 team for the international. I covered the first two at RTJ in Gainesville, Virginia, when I was living up in that area. I've never understood why these matches were non-competitive. because those teams, the international teams, not this year, obviously, but they have been really, really deep and strong in the past. That team in 96 had Norman, who blew the Masters, had Els, who was a year away from winning his second major, who had Jumbo Ozaki, whatever, Nick Price, Steve Elkington, Vijay Singh, Craig Parry was a good player. I mean, they had so many good players. How has this been so one-sided?
Yeah, to go back to that one specifically, I don't know what Greg's doing these days. I can give a call and ask about that 96 event, why they didn't play better. You would think at some point the law of averages balances out. Like you said earlier, on any given day, Siwoo Kim can shoot 10 shots better than Scottie Scheffler and not even play that much better. It's just some of his putts fall in the hole and some of Scheffler's don't. And so it's less about a talent discrepancy. I don't know. I think there's something to do with the camaraderie. I mean, going back a few years when Europe would beat up on the U.S. team in the Ryder Cup every other year, we'd say, why can't the U.S. team win this thing? Well, European guys are closer knit. They're really, there's some togetherness there. These guys travel together. They like each other maybe a little bit more. It's less of an individual sport over there. And so my only answer to that is maybe that correlates to this event as well, in that, look, the U.S. guys are mostly, most of these guys are really good friends. They all hang out together. They all go to dinners together and stuff like that. They've all known each other for a very long time, whereas you're really trying to cull something together with an international team. I just watched the pairing of Taylor Pendrith and Mito Pereira walking past me a couple minutes ago here on the second hole. I looked at them and I wonder if they even talked to each other. I wonder if they knew each other before this week. They were both rookies this past week, this past season. They both play on the Korn Ferry Tour. I'm guessing at some point they've been paired together, they've played together, but I can't imagine they're good friends and knew each other that well before all of a sudden, hey, you're in this big event and you guys are paired together, and oh, by the way, you got to go out there and beat Tony Finau and Max Homa.
By the way, before we say goodbye, what do you make of the PGA Tour telling Greg Norman not to show up at the QBE Shootout, the tournament that he founded?
I hadn't heard that, actually, but that does not surprise me whatsoever. I've had a few questions about that over the last month or two. What's going on? I mean, for those who don't know, the QBE Shootout, it's got a title sponsor, but this is casually known, informally known as the Shark Shootout.
Yeah, it's unofficial money, but it's hysterical.
Yeah. I was wondering what was going to happen with that. So, yeah, that's a little funny.
The golf world in which we live. Jason Sobel, I appreciate your time, man. Get back to watching. Get back to your hard day at the office.
It's the only thing I'm qualified for, man.
You're the man. I appreciate your time, man.
Thanks, bud.
Talk to you. Jason Sobel of golf. Sirius XM, Channel 92, and the Action Network.
Tough day.
Jason's living the dream.
Yeah.
Just totally, totally living the dream. He would never get suspended.
No.
For a full year. But he's living the dream. We're going to do top five, bottom five of the NFL here in just a second. I've got the five best and the five worst teams, actually more than five worst teams in the league, so I couldn't really decide. So we kind of, it's a bloated bottom five. But before we get to that, top of the show, we talked about Ime Udoka, the head coach of the Boston Celtics, who will be suspended for a year for, this is what the team is offering to reporters, a consensual, intimate relationship with somebody who also works for the team. And look, the last thing I want to do is be disrespectful, so I'm just asking, I'm going to say it this way, and then I will ask that you all who hold this view really think about it. If you think that your job and your company is the same as Ime Udoka's job and the Boston Celtics, if you think those things are identical, I cannot help you. Because they are not, and they are not even on the same planet. There are a finite number of people who are good at being head coaches of NBA teams. Half of the people who are coaching NBA teams right now, we know aren't good. So, think about this for just 1 second. You've got a really successful first-year head coach who connected with players after the wonder kid, Brad Stevens, his effectiveness with essentially the same group had waned. He has something. The Celtics were just in the NBA Finals. If you are telling me that you believe that some company handbook that says we have no fraternization among employees is going to cost your head coach a full year, again, I can't help you. I just ask that you think about it. So, all I'm saying is that there's more to this story, a lot more to this story than Ime Udoka and Janice from accounting had a little fun after a company cookout. There's way more to this story than that, because there has to be. Whether it's related to that relationship, or that relationship is being used as an excuse, there's more to that story. There is no way on this earth they are taking their head coach off the bench
for a year.
No way.
Nope.
Look, if it was just, hey man, you can't date Janice in accounting. If that's the case, they're going to fine him $50,000. They're going to suspend him for the preseason games, and then we're done.
Keep it moving.
There's more to it than that.
Yeah.
Way more to it than that. Use your brain. That's all I'm asking. I'm confused that this is a year-long suspension. If you're not, then you just are accepting what the Celtics are selling. And I think that's a bad thing to accept. All right, shall we do top five, bottom five in the NFL? Oh, look at that. Yes, we did this. We do power rankings. I like.
Yeah.
We might have to change the name, but yeah. I like power rankings. All right, I always like to start. Well, I don't always. We usually flip it back and forth. So we'll start with the worst five this week, and we'll go with the best five first next week. All right, number 28. Are the New England Patriots, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the New York Jets? Yes, I have three teams tied for number 28. Don't let the smooth taste fool you. They're all 1-1. The three of these teams are not good. They're not. The Pats have 24 points through two games. 24. They're not good. Mac Jones might not be the guy, by the way. For you Steelers fans, or you Patriots fans, we got Mac Jones. Like, yep, he's still the guy that Bill Belichick allowed to throw only three times in a single game. They won that game, by the way. Steelers have 37 points. That's it. But almost all of the points they scored against the Bengals came from 1,000 turnovers. So, and as for the Jets, they continue to insist on starting Joe Flacco in actual games that matter in the regular season. And I know they won the last one. They won the last one because Nick Chubb had a brain fart and didn't take a knee before the end zone. If he slides, it's over.
Yeah.
And the Jets lose by 2 touchdowns. So, yes, they won, but that's a game where the Browns lost, not the Jets winning. That's a loss.
Ugly win.
Gosh. I mean, look, the Jets need wins. Number 29, the Tennessee Titans and the Cincinnati Bengals. Don't mess with me on a technicality here. I realize I have three teams at number 28 and two teams at number 29. I get it. I understand the math. So I lump these two teams in together for this reason. And I've said this before. Last year, the Titans were the number one seed in the AFC. The Cincinnati Bengals were the number four seed They were the fourth best division winner. They finished, I believe, 10-7.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006. But it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcasts. The Bengals went to the Super Bowl. So these two teams, you have the regular season AFC champ, if that's even a thing, which it isn't, but the regular season winner, if you will, and the team that ended up in the Super Bowl. I'm not sure either are going to make the playoffs.
Nah.
That's the problem. I actually think the Bengals will make the playoffs. I'm not as optimistic about the Titans. And I don't think these are two of the worst five teams ultimately when we're, you know, where we're 8-9 weeks into the season, but I think they're not going to be one of the top five either. ESPN asked the question if the Bengals should be concerned or not. And I would say, yeah, of course they should be concerned. Titans probably more concerned, but I think the Bengals should be concerned for this reason. Keep in mind that until the last 4 weeks of the season, the Bengals were a borderline playoff team. They won their last three, and actually at 10-6, because the division was pretty mediocre thanks to Lamar Jackson's injury and the fact that the Ravens lost, I believe, their last eight regular season games, that they wrapped up the division. And so they lost the last game of the season, but they were essentially a 10-win team. So that's not great. The difference between, like, when we talked about yesterday, we were using the Panthers as an example of, you know, when will you be a legitimate 10 or 11 win team? That, to me, is a playoff team, a 10 or 11 win team. And the Bengals were just that close to being a 9-win team, which is at best borderline. The Bengals are a team that got hot. The Bengals are still a team that can't block. They're still a team that allows too many sacks. So I'm concerned about the Bengals, but they still play in a division that I'm not sure is going to be that good. I think the Ravens are still the best team in that division, but I kind of have my doubts about how great the Ravens are going to be, even though I really like the Ravens. I don't know. The Ravens who allowed the Dolphins to score all those points in the fourth quarter, maybe that's a blip too. Anyway, Tennessee and Cincinnati to me are tied for 29. Number 30. The Atlanta Falcons, who are 0-2. I was looking at odds for first coach to be fired, which, of course, Matt Rhule is the odds-on favorite to be the first coach to be fired. But if you're looking for a value bet, I don't hate Arthur Smith. I saw him at 20-1. I don't hate Arthur Smith as a value bet to be the first head coach to be fired, but that depends on whether or not David Tepper is interested in firing Matt Rhule early. I don't think he is.
No.
So I kind of like the value of Arthur Smith there. So number 31, the Indianapolis Colts. See Arthur Smith. Frank Reich. You keep handpicking your quarterback and you're working your way down the ladder. Like, Philip Rivers is clearly better than Carson Wentz, who is not better, but not all that worse than Matt Ryan. I mean, it's over for Ryan. It's been over for Ryan for a couple of years. This is not good. I'm worried that the Colts are just going to completely go into the abyss. And maybe, I always will remind you, I could be way wrong through 2 weeks. Way wrong.
Still early.
I have no faith that the Colts are going to be any good, which gets me back to Will Brinson telling us a few weeks ago that the Jacksonville Jaguars are not a terrible play to win that division.
Yeah.
And he might be right.
Yeah.
9 wins could be enough. Just saying. Number 32, the Carolina Panthers. Congratulations, you won something. All right. Baker Mayfield earlier said, "Yo, we're close. We're so close. We only lost to combine two games by 5 points." Right. Here's Matt Rhule on a game plan, sort of.
I think if you score some touchdowns instead of field goals, that changes things as well. You know, the first scoring drive for us, I think, was a 16-play drive, resulted in a field goal. You know, so we've shown we can sustain it. To me, it's just kind of getting out of our own way a little bit. And again, that just comes down to me, just everybody executing at a high level.
First of all, he's right. Field goals, not as good as touchdowns.
Right.
He's already growing as a head coach. I mean, every team has a 16-play drive. It doesn't matter how bad you are.
Duh.
Every single team has a 16-play drive at some point in the game. Maybe not 16, but seriously, every team can sustain long drives. You have to do that like five times a game, and they don't. So, all right, let's go.
His voice makes me sick.
Look, you know what? Matt slowed down this year.
Uh-huh.
He has slowed down his cadence this year.
Yes.
Because you know what we referred to him last year as. You remember this, Victoria?
What's his remind me?
Oh, Porky Pig.
Oh, my goodness.
Is it Porky Pig or Elmer Fudd? Elmer Fudd.
This is perfect. Elmer Fudd. Well, both of them.
Either way, I'm drawing a blank on which one it was.
But it
sounds like
Well, and maybe he won't
Looney
say stupid
character.
Things if he slows it down, too, because
no,
he has a tendency. Nope, he's
we're
still doing
already
it.
Through 2 weeks, yeah. And we already know. all right, to the top five. Number five. I know they lost week one in Minnesota. I think the Packers are the fifth best team for me right now. In the NFL. They still have Aaron Rodgers. I've said this before. It doesn't matter who his wide receivers are. He's going to make them better than they are. That's what Aaron Rodgers has done for his entire career. They have great running backs. They need their offensive line to kind of get back to health. So they went into the opener without both tackles. They're not healthy yet. If they get some semblance of health on the offensive line, they're going to score a ton. And I think they have a good defense. They could absolutely be in the Super Bowl again. So I'm not worried about the Packers being just 1-1. But you don't have to give them credit for beating the Bears last week because they always beat the Bears. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are number four for me. And I'm worried about their offense. And now they're going into this game with the Packers, by the way, on Sunday Night Football. No, not Sunday Night Football, 4:30 game. At
yeah.
home.
Yes.
Without Mike Evans, who came off the bench in their game last week against the Saints and lost his mind and got ejected from the game and is serving a one-game suspension. Damian Woody, he appealed the suspension yesterday, and it was denied by the NFL. Damian Woody from ESPN on that.
They did get it right, Key. I mean, listen, everyone talks about this conspiracy theory or whatever, but that's, to me, that's a bunch of nonsense. I think, listen, you can't just, come on, man. Like, we already know the bad blood that Mike Evans and Marshawn Lattimore have, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the New Orleans Saints, but you can't run from the sideline and just go and tackle somebody like that. Like, the league is going to send a message. Like, enough is enough, guys. Like, this stuff has been going on for far too long. And honestly, he's lucky he's just getting one.
I don't know if he's lucky he's just getting one. I think missing a game is significant for a player. Not only, I mean, you lose the salary for that game, but your team's impacted for that game. They're not as good a team without Mike Evans as they are with Mike Evans. But of course they were going to uphold the suspension.
Yeah.
You can't come off the bench.
No.
And but Marshawn Lattimore was part of the fight, too.
He was, yes.
Marshawn Lattimore did not get suspended. Why? Because he was in the game.
Right. He was already on the field.
I mean, you can't come off the bench and get into an altercation.
No.
It's just so simple.
I read an article where some lip reader had seen his voice, like his mouth, and what he said to the ref as to why he came off the sidelines was, well, it's Tom Brady. What do you think I'm going to do? Like, that's an excuse.
Right.
It's Tom.
So, he alluded to some sort of a conspiracy. What's the conspiracy? Like, I haven't even... Was there a second pusher? Was there a second guy who came off the bench that we didn't see? Was there a grassy knoll? I don't... But what are we doing? So, yeah, I know. It's Tom Brady. No. Mike Evans ran off the bench and got into a fight is, I guess, a stretch. But you can't do that. You can't come off the bench and do that. It's really that simple. It really is that simple. All right, where are we now? We're at number three.
Yes.
Philadelphia Eagles. Buffalo Bills light. I think that there are so many ways that the Eagles remind me of the Bills just with less talent.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that. That's not disparaging on the Eagles. To me, they're the best team in the NFC today. But they remind me of the Bills because they have a very good running game. In part because their quarterback is really dangerous with his legs. But that, to me, is the difference. Josh Allen, even though the Eagles have A.J. Brown now, but Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, God, they have two superstars.
Yeah. They just have all the pieces to the puzzle.
I automatically went too far forward here. But the Eagles are number three. Number two, the Kansas City Chiefs. Still great.
Yeah.
Still great, even though they don't have Tyreek Hill. Yeah. They missed Tyreek Hill. No question about it. They still have Andy Reid. They still have Eric Bieniemy as an offensive coordinator because nobody's hiring Eric Bieniemy for some stupid reason. And they still have Patrick Mahomes. And they still have Travis Kelce. And the defense is pretty good. Defense not great. No Tyrann Mathieu. That's a loss, but they're pretty doggone good.
Their offense makes up for it.
Yeah. And maybe there's no replacing Tyreek Hill, to be honest. You see what he has done for Miami's offense. And if you're wondering why I don't have Miami in my top five, even though Miami is 2-0, is because I don't think they're that good. I mean, if you're a Dolphins fan, fine. I hope for your sake I'm wrong. And I think there's a fair chance I am. But right now, I don't think that they're one of the top five teams in the league. And then number one is the Buffalo Bills. And it's going to take something for me to think that another team is better than them. In fact, I'll tell you right now, if the Dolphins beat the Bills on Sunday, and they will play, I believe it's in Miami, I will still have the Bills ahead of the Dolphins. I think Buffalo is... I don't know. I don't see a weakness. They are great defensively. They have so many good players in the front seven, and they have a super secondary. And their offense, I don't know how you stop them.
No, they're strong.
They can run the ball without big names. Singletary's very good, but I mean they don't have stars. It's very possible that James Cook, Dalvin Cook's younger brother. It's very possible that he's the best running back that they have.
Yeah.
Now, he's a rookie. He came out of Georgia. He's a rookie, and he put the ball on the ground, and that's not good. But they're deep. Also, Zach Moss at that position. They're deep there. Good wide receivers. Knox, the tight end, is excellent. Allen is a weapon in multiple ways. And they're well coached. If the Achilles heel, we've talked about this. The Achilles heel might be Sean McDermott. We don't know yet.
Maybe.
Because last year he cost them the game against the Patriots, and he cost them the playoff game against the Chiefs. Hang those losses on the head coach. But he's still a pretty good head coach.
Yeah. I think they're solid unless they get multiple big injuries. Yeah. But that's it.
Everybody.
Yeah.
The same thing for every team, as long as they don't get decimated by injuries. Then they should be fine. I just think that that team has everything, absolutely everything. You feel good about Panthers Saints this weekend?
No,
of course not.
Nope,
of course not.
Not at all.
Like, and you have no reason to feel good about any Panthers game.
No.
Look, no. You know what I don't like, and people who have listened. Since I started doing this a long time ago, I do not like the knee-jerk fire the coach.
Yeah.
Okay? I don't think it really helps you unless you are a team that needs a turnaround within the season to fire the coach midstream. It's pretty clear that Matt Rhule's not good at it. So let's hope they get a win.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19th, 2006. But it all started May 6th, 1997, with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.